Hello, everyone. I'm Mark Shenton. I'm the theatre critic for the Sunday Express and also write a daily blog for The Stage. But tonight I'm on a different side of the footlights, so I'm coming to the third in a new series of interviews. These are a few of my favourite songs, in which I'm talking to leading figures of the West End about their favourite songs and where these fit into their lives and their careers. As you've just heard, the series is benefiting the Theatrical Guild. We've already had met West End director-choreographers Rob Ashford and Craig Revel Horwood. Now it's the turn of the producers. Tomorrow we have legendary play producer Michael Codron, but first tonight we have Bill Kenwright, who's undoubtedly our single most prolific commercial producer in the West End, or indeed the world, to choose some of his favourite songs. So to start at the very beginning, because that's
of course
a fine place to start, we're going to hear a song from the show that started you off in the business, really. You saw West Side Story.
Yeah.
In 1959, I think you said.
Yeah, at Liverpool. One is often asked how you started off in the business, or what are your favourite five musicals, and always way, way, way up there is West Side Story for me. Shall I tell the story now? Because I'm not quite sure what we're doing,
right.
But I'm sure we'll get it as we go along. So what happened was, I was going to see Everton. There's a surprise. Everton is a football club. You might hear about them a little bit during the evening. And the game it was cancelled. In those days, games were cancelled for ice and things like that. And I remember I was on top of the bus going past Liverpool Empire, and I looked across, and it was an afternoon, obviously. And it said West Side Story. So I got off the bus and I walked over. And I'd seen two plays at the Liverpool Playhouse, but I'd never seen a musical. And I went in, got my seat, and I sat at the end of a row. And I just watched this musical. And at half time, all I can remember is the end of the first half of West Side Story is the rumble. And the Rumble, it was the original West End production. The set was a huge wire mesh.
Yeah.
It was underneath the archways, underneath the city of New York. And it was a huge wire mesh V-shaped grid, which went 18, 20 foot. So the whole of the stage was covered by this grid. And you saw them fighting, and you thought, well, how are they going to get off the stage? Because there's no exit that way, and there's no in there. And I don't know whether they ever knew you saw it, but what they did was all of them, one by one, including the kid playing anybody's, they ran towards the grid, one hand above the other, and did somersaults up and over it. And I just sat there, and I've never seen anything like it. And I swear to you, I sat like this for the whole of the 20 and 50 minute interval, because I just didn't want the spell to be broken. And I just thought, I can't believe what I've just seen. And I went out, and I didn't know about bookshops or anything like that, and I promise you this is true, I went to W.H. Smith's. And there in W.H. Smith, with a brown cover, was the libretto, the book of West Side Story. And I bought it, and I learned every single word of every song. I feel pleased. Nobody was saying it. I learned it. And I've never forgotten it. I came to direct it many, many years later. But it had such an effect on me. And I'm sure on most people who saw it. You're far too young to remember the original production. But it was, some of you aren't too young to remember the original production. But it was just the best. The best.
And at least you didn't have your heart broken by Everton that day. As well.
That was one of the few days I didn't have my heart broken by Everton yet. But I did have my heart broken by Tony and Maria.
And right now, not doing somersaults, but Caroline Sheen, who's been with us all week, will come out with Ben Stock.
It's only Tuesday. She's been with us all week.
To sing somewhere.
Somewhere a place for us, peace and quiet.
So, of course, Bill, that's where it all began for you, but it took a little while before you started to produce, because you detoured to acting and singing first.
Well, I always wanted to be an actor. My mum used to tell me stories of how Bill Kenwright became Buffalo Bill and fought off the Indians in the back streets of Liverpool, and I always had this dream of being a big Hollywood film star. I think if you come from Liverpool, you never wanted to be an actor, you wanted to be a movie star. And I wanted to be Errol Flynn or Stuart Granger or Alan Ladd. And so the acting came as part of, from as far as I can remember, I wanted to be an actor or score the winning goal playing for Everton in the cup final and break my neck at the same time. Because Bert Trautman had broken his neck in playing for Manchester City, and I thought that was a fantastic thing to do.
Did he survive?
He survived, yeah. Bert Trautman, did he survive? Legend Bert Trautman. It's going to be one of those evenings, like you said. So my mum, who's sitting up there somewhere, the best mum in the world. We've all got the best mum in the world. I actually have got the best mum in the world. She would have scrubbed steps to make her son. She did scrub steps. What am I saying? To help her son survive. She sent me to a drama school after school, and I joined the Liverpool Playhouse as a stoat. How the happy little stoats laugh when he is off his oats. Down with Toad, down with Toad. In 1956, I think, yeah. With a fantastic company. Liverpool Playhouse was a great repertory company, and wonderful, wonderful actor who became friend for life, Trevor Baxter, was playing Ratty. And what Trevor Baxter did with his tail, no 11-year-old boy should ever have seen on a stage. People like Rita Tusingham, John Stride were all there. And I sort of hung around Liverpool Playhouse for about 4 or 5 years, making the tea, doing the calls, just doing anything just to be in the theatre. And that's basically where it all started at Liverpool Playhouse.
Well, as it did for many people. I mean, a generation later, there was the Julie Walters, Blaisdell.
And in between, there was John Thorpe came just after I left, and people like that.
Yeah, so obviously it's a...
Repertory theatre was great in those days, you see. You could go a different play every 3 weeks, and it was wonderful. I mean, I actually went... One of my very first jobs was I went to Butlin's, Pafeli, to do a season there. And you know, there, they did a different play every 6 days. I promise you, a different play every 6 days. And I was the juve lead, and I had the lead in Come Blow Your Horn, Love's a Luxury, Murder, da, da, da. And I remember the leading man was a lovely man, actors who some of you know, called Ronnie Scott Dodd. And we had 4 days rehearsal to get the first one on, then you got it on, and then you started rehearsing the next one. And I remember saying, Ron, after about 2 days, Ron, will you know your lines by the first night? And he said, Cherub, I won't know my lines by the last night, but don't worry about that. I remember they used to... I'm digressing.
This is marvellous.
You'd go and you do this, you do the play, come, so my mum saw all of them, Come Blow Your Horn, and around an empty, no one had come, like no one, it started at 7 o'clock, and around about 8:20, people start coming in, you think this is a, couldn't have an interval because he didn't want to stop the flow, and 8:20, they come in, and I go, what's going on? And they showed movies after the play, you see. So they came in early to get their movie seat. So the first hour we were crap, second half hour we were quite good. But what happened was after, as I was in Pafeli, I auditioned for a musical called Passionflower Hotel, which was on Prince of Wales, and about 5 schoolboys and 5 schoolgirls. And I got the leading role, one of the leading roles in it. And the Forbes Russell Theatre Company ran the Butlins Holiday Camps, and they were wonderful. After 2 weeks, just 2 weeks, and I just played all the roles over a period of days, because eventually you played a different play every night. They released me, and they let me come down to London, and I'm forever grateful.
So it was your West End debut?
Was in Passionflower Hotel, at the Prince of Wales.
And then...
And they spelt my name wrong in lights outside. I came all the way down in the car with my mum and my dad and my gran, all the way down Piccadilly, which was a one-way street then going, and you could see the Prince of Wales there, and I thought, this is my 18, this is my moment, and I looked up, and they'd missed the W out. And on the last night, they'd still missed the W out, and nobody had changed this
one. So saving some money, perhaps.
Yes, I think so.
Who was the producer?
Gene Gutowski. Do you remember Gene Gutowski? Gene Gutowski was Roman Polanski's film producer, and it was the only stage show he'd ever done. He did Cul-de-Sac and all those, yeah. Knife in the Water, all those great Polanski movies, Gene Gutowski produced them, and he just did this. He bought the rights to a very popular book by Rosalind Erskine called Passion Flower Hotel, and Rosalind Erskine was actually a man. It was a big, big bestseller, and it was about five public school girls who start a brothel for public school boys over the road. And the five girls were Jane Birkin, Francesca Annis, Karen Fernald, Hilary Dwyer, Pauline Collins. Who else, Mum? There was another one. And the five boys were Bill Kenwright, Jeremy Clyde, Nicky Henson, Bunny May, David Charkham, I think I remember. I had the best 6 months. Best.
And meanwhile, you also launched a parallel career as a singer. You did some singing and you released some records, which are...
Oh, you don't want to hear about my records. Yeah, I released a lot of records. I used to go into the studio after the show every night, because you get the studio cheaper. And if you look at my... It was always a Bill Kenwright production down at the bottom. I made my own records, yeah. First one was Bill Kenwright and his Clump of Fairies. I promise you! What the Girls Look Pretty This Summer, written by Trevor Peacock. Great record, not. They were the girls in the chorus. And I did loads and loads of records, but they weren't very good, Mark.
And then
one was good.
Which was?
It was called Sugar Man, and it was by Bobby Darin. That when I was in Coronation Street later, yeah. And I got a recording contract.
People still remember your days in Coronation Street. You were only there for a year, and people still talk about that now.
The beautiful little singer's mum reminded me outside. I was in it for a year, but I kept coming back.
Yeah.
Because what happened was, I did my year, and I did my year for my mum. This is the honest truth, because I worked an awful lot for Granada. I did sort of play after play for them. And I was staying with my mum at home, my mum and dad at home, and I was doing... The Granada had a D.H. Lawrence series, where the short stories of D.H. Lawrence, and I was playing the lead in one of them called Strike Pay, and I was at home with my mum, and we were washing the dishes, and she said, "What's next, love?" And I said, "There's nothing next," and there wasn't. And she said, "Oh, you've not been out to work," and I really... Thank God, touch wood. I haven't been out of work as an actor, because I've gone from Passion Flower to the Park to Flame Flute in the Park to doing
Regent's Park.
In Regent's Park, yeah. Doing a lot of plays for Granada, getting bigger and better every time. And this one, this D.H. Lawrence was a really good role, a coveted role that everyone wanted, and I got it. And I said, "There's nothing else." She said, "Oh, that's a shame." I said, "Well, to be honest with you, I've been offered something today, but I don't want to do it." I didn't tell her I was offered it 2 weeks before. I said, "I don't want to do it." And she said, "What is it?" And I said, "I won't tell you, Mum, because, you know, you might want me to do it, and, you know, I'll do anything for you, but, you know, I don't want to do this." So she said, "Whatever you want in your life, whatever you want, that's fine." We're washing the dishes. And I said, "They've asked me if I'd go into Coronation Street." And she dropped all the dishes. And she said, "What?" And I said, "They've asked me to go in Coronation Street." And she went... And she took me, we had a little phone in the corner, and she took me and she phoned my gran, my auntie Beth, my uncle George, and she said, "Just tell him all I want to do is walk through Lewis's," which was our big store, yeah, "with you on my arm." They say, "There's that lad with his mother from Coronation Street." So, and true story, and I signed the next day for a year.
And presumably that did happen. I mean, overnight you would have become quite famous.
Yeah, I mean, I remember on the first day there was a wonderful... there was a lot of lovely people in it, but there was one who played a huge part in my life, a lady called Pat Phoenix, who played Elsie Tanner, and she was to be a big person in my life as an actress. And on the first day, she said, "Come here, son." She said, "What's your name?" I said, "Bill." She said, "Who are you playing?" I said, "Gordon." And she said, "Just remember one thing. the graveyards are full of people who thought they were indispensable. And I didn't know what she, I had no, it was a funny thing to say. So we were 2 weeks ahead, and I used to come back to Liverpool, to London on the Friday night on the train. And the week after the first episode had gone out, because then it was even bigger than it is now, there were like 15, 16 million every month. I got on the train, and I wouldn't say I was mobbed, but I couldn't move for people just coming into the carriage. And then, you know, the character becomes successful, not you.
Yeah.
And he became a very popular character, and I understood what you meant, that you don't take any of it seriously, because it's not real. That kind of fame ain't real. It's just not real. No fame is real, to be honest with you. But soap fame is not real,
all. And of course, it was a couple of your Coronation Street people who gave you your who were part of your first theatre production.
Yeah.
Because Reginald Marsh was involved, co-produced it with you, and Anne Reid was in it.
What happened was I was given 3 weeks off to go to Oldham Rep to do Billy Liar, because it's a part I'd always wanted to play, and they'd approached me, and I never did holidays, don't do them much now. I said, yeah, I'd love to. So I went, and they phoned me up literally the day before I was about to take time off, and said they double booked, and they were not an established show. They booked companies in to do certain plays, and they got it wrong, and they booked The Happiest Days of Your Life by mistake, and they said, will you come and do that? I said, I want to do Billy Liar. And cut a long story short, and it is a long story. My mate in it was Nigel Humphreys, and Nigel had played Zigzagger in the West End with the National Youth Theatre, and we were sitting over the road down there in the Wimpy Bar in the corner. Wimpy Bar, remember? And it's got to be 40-odd years ago.
Yeah.
And Nigel's sitting opposite me, he says, well, why don't we do it ourselves? I don't what? He said, do it like Mickey and Judy. No, I said, like Mickey and Judy. And he said, how did you do that? He said, I don't know, you must be able to do it yourself. So we went over to Spotlight and we bought contacts, and we came back and we went to the bank, and you used to get little blue bags with threepenny pieces in them, and there was a phone on the wall, and we rang every theatre in contacts, like Majesty's, Aberdeen, and we said, Twinkle Twinkle, we're stars from Coronation Street, can we come and do Billy Liar? And they said, when? And we said, the week after next. And they went, no, we're a bit busy. And we eventually got to the municipal section. You don't even know. And we got Buxton Playhouse, which was in the Buxton Parks and Gardens. And hello, this is Bill Kenwright, Coronation, Twinkle Twinkle. Can I come and do Bill? Hi, Mr. Kenwright, when would that be? And I told them that, which was 2 weeks. That's all right. Yeah. Really? He said, yeah, you can't do the Wednesday night because of the dog show, but you can do the rest of the time. And I said, £5 a night it was. So I put I think we've got a date. And and Nigel and I went home. We phoned up all of our mates, Julie Goodyear, who was Bette Lynch in Coronation Street. She was an extra in those days. And she came and she did Rita. She's the one with the cow and iron lung. Eileen Mayers was Sheila Birtles in it. And we just literally went up in the car.
And put the show on right here.
But we hired a house in Buxton. We painted all of our own posters, not realizing that you had to do posters in special paint. And it rained. We had, what do you do about a set?
Yeah.
What do you do about a set? And there was a wonderful woman called Nita Valerie. And Nita Valerie was well known in the north, because there was a world up north, you know, where they used to do weekly touring. And a big, big part of the diet was the Hume Hippodrome would have My Bare Lady or Strip Strip Hooray 1 week. And the next week it would have Dracula.
Yeah.
And Nita Valerie was very good in Dracula because she took her teeth out and she had two teeth on her. And she always played grandmothers. And someone said, phone Nita Valerie, she'll tell you where to get a set. So she said, you phone up this number and you get a set. So I phoned up this Bradford Scenic Display, 19, Twinkle Twinkle. And I said, I'm doing Billy Liar at the Buxton Playhouse. Buxton wasn't the playhouse, it was somewhere else. And they weren't fazed. They said, oh, yeah, we know that one, Mr. Kenwright. Billy the Liar, we know that one. And I said, well, you know, it's an inside and an outside. Aye, yeah, that's fine. What time do you want it there? And I said, well, I'd like a rehearsal Sunday night. We open on the Monday. Clueless. Clueless. Yeah. So I remember we had a football game for the Coronation Street 11 on the Sunday afternoon. We got there on the Sunday, the whole of the cast, and I promise you, they'd sent me an interior from Lady Be Good and an exterior from Lilac Time. I looked. First rule of any producer: improvise. Just yeah. So we all got the paint, and we put it on. And on the first night, Reg Marsh came and he brought Waterhouse and Hall to see it.
Yeah.
We got massive publicity because we were two lads from Coronation Street with Coronation Street people. The whole of the cast had put in 250 quid each. So it was a £2,000 budget. There was eight of us. And we got huge publicity. And they took me out to lunch the next day and they said, you're good at this, aren't you? And I thought they meant playing Billy Lyre. I thought, And they said, no producing. And they gave me a play called Come Laughing Home.
Yeah.
And Reg said to me, you're doing what I've always wanted to do. I said, what? He said, produce. I said, I don't want to be. No way do I want to be a producer. Forget it. No. I want to play the leads. And he said, well, couldn't we be the H.M. Tennant of... Da-da-da-da-da? And he came up with this name. He was Dave Smith, David Smith of Coronation. I was Gordon Clegg. And we started David Gordon Productions. And David Gordon Productions was started to take soap stars into the provinces and open theatres.
Yeah.
And you've got to remember, in those days, I promise you, there was about 10 theatres doing the odd week. You know, Anna Neagle was on her 90th tour of Persons Unknown. John Hanson was doing Desert Song. And that's all you were getting. And
so there's no touring circuit.
There's no touring circuit at all. Yeah. And we started this touring circuit,
right,
which was to put those people in Coronation Street back in back on the stage.
But of course, the interesting thing, of course, is that there's no school for producers. You can go to drama school to become an actor, but there's still, even today, there's no real school.
There's the more today, I think.
I think there are courses
and bursaries. Yeah. But
basically, you have to learn it yourself, which is what
Or not as the case, maybe. I don't think I've learned anything in my life. Yeah, you do. You learn as you go along. I remember we opened, and Come Laughing Home was Anne Reed, who was Valerie Barlow, me, a lovely lad you might remember called Roger Tonge, who was Sandy in Crossroads, sadly died. He was fantastic. And we opened up Blackpool Grand, and I have to tell you, Blackpool to me still is the South of France, Las Vegas, everything rolled into one. Because we used to go there as kids, you know, I love Blackpool. And we opened a Blackpool Grand and we did a fantastic week. And I remember all the company being on the beach, giving notes, sharing things together. It was, I thought, this is heaven. This is what I want to do with my life. As long as I'm playing the leading role. And then the next week we went to Bradford Alhambra. And you've been there. And the little guy called Roland Hill, who was like a little puppet, elderly puppet, and he came into the dressing room and he had one of those waistcoats on with the and he dangled. He said, "Hello, Mr. Kenwright." I said, "Hello, Mr. Hill. I believe you had a good week at Blackpool." I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, you won't do washers here." And we didn't. But we did 10 weeks.
Yeah.
My agent, John Cadell, said to me, you've got to have someone to do it for you, because I didn't know what to do. And we paid two people who'd just come into the business £18 a week to manage it for us.
Yeah.
That was Paul Elliott and Dunk Weldon. Paul and Duncan managed it. We got the set from Spring and Port Wine, which had just come off.
And then did we do the right set this time?
It was a set I used many, many times after that. And we toured Come Laughing Home.
Right.
And it did really well. Then we did Pat Phoenix and the Miracle Worker, which was sold out everywhere. It was such a success in an odd way that every theatre we went to, they had to put an easel in the reception area saying, ladies and gentlemen, we know you watch Coronation Street, but it is Pat Phoenix playing Annie Sullivan. Please, could you refrain from talking when she comes on? Because I promise you, she'd come on, and they go, oh, there she is. She was with Len Fairclough last night, you know, all those two. Talk all the way through it. But she was fantastic, and it sold out everywhere. She was not a great Annie Sullivan, I've got to tell you, but she was a fantastic lady.